everybody. Welcome to Brotherly Pod. Here it is, Thursday, April 25, 2024 here. Beautiful day here. You may even hear some birds chirping in the background. I know I can hear them right now. Right outside the window there. So, I am back. It is a solo show today. I'm Dan the Flyer Fan. Damn it, I don't need co-hosts. I can do this by myself. And we are, a week and a half now? 2 weeks? 1 week? Has it only been a week? Oh, God. Into the Flyers offseason. And, biggest news to come this week was that Ivan Fedotov has re-signed with the Philadelphia Flyers. 2 years, $6.5 million, and that's a 3.27 AAV. And, we played 3 games in 23-24, 495 GAA. 811 save percentage. And, you know, when that news broke on Tuesday morning that Fedotov had re-signed, at about 8 a.m., I think Anthony broke it. And it's funny because originally there was a lot of people that went, his number kind of sucks. That's a not great AAV for this guy. And it's like, wow, people are being rational and reasonable and objective about a decision the Flyers made? That was surprising. And then, of course, I had to go run some errands that morning and logged back on Twitter around lunchtime, and it was just back to, this is the greatest contract that's ever been signed in the history of the NHL! I'm like, oh, Christ, we didn't learn our lesson yet. Now, the story is that this was the number that Fedotov had demanded in order to make the jump to North America, which is baffling, by the way. His home country kept him hostage for the last 2 years. The Flyer said, we'll get you out here. And he goes, that's great. I will join you, comrade. But first, you must give me $7 million. Is that a Russian accent? Was that offensive? I apologize if any Russians are listening. Well, yeah. Well, yeah, let's just move on. It was a, it's not a great contract. I mean, if it's the price that you had to pay, it is what it is. It's only 2 years. It is what it is. Between Fedotov and Ersson, now you have $4.7 million committed to your NHL-level goaltending. It is what it is. You know, all that individually people were using to justify the thing, but it's not a good contract. That's a shit AAV, everybody, for a goaltender with 3 games and an 8.11 save percentage. It's okay to say that. That's just Daniel being negative, as always. And by the way, it's not just $4.7 million they have invested in their goaltending. They're paying Cal Peterson $3.8 million to play in the AHL right now. And that's going to be the case next season as well. So it's actually closer, what's that, 8.5 or something in cap invest in the goaltending. So it is what it is. It's going to be an interesting to see how that tandem work next year. I assume they end up going more 50-50 split, right? Unless one of the two show up and earn it. I don't know if, you know, I wrote a piece about this a few weeks ago looking at it, because Ersson really kind of, I just flat out overworked, right, at the end, and that, I think, led to a lot of the problems that he had endured. But looking back on his season with the Phantoms in 22-23, it was pretty much the same story. This guy was bulletproof in the midway point of the season, you know, December, January, and, like, once the heat got turned up at the end and he was playing every night, this guy was tired. And he fell off a cliff the last, I think, 4 or 5 games that he played. He allowed 5 goals each. I think he only had a save percentage above 900. It was 2 of his last 7 games in the AHL? So, like, it was a weird number. I don't have the stats pulled up in front of me, but I put them all in that article. And yeah, I don't know. We'll see. Fedotov, I mean, he should theoretically be better than an 8.11 save percentage, right? I mean, it's going to be hard to be worse. It's going to be hard to maintain that level of shittiness, you know, being in there when the Flyers are losing that 8-game losing streak, or in the middle of that 8-game losing streak, I should say. And so, you know, even if he's not a bona fide stud at the NHL, it is what it is. It's only 2 years, but, you know, one of our listeners pointed this out to me on Twitter, and it's a good fucking point, is that we feel like we say this with every contract the Flyers sign these days, of like, hey, this isn't great, but it could be worse. And when you start factoring all of that stuff in, you know, say they're paying Ivan Fedotov $1 million more than they should, they're paying Nick Seeler $1 million more than they should, you're paying Ryan Poehling $1 million more than they should, Owen Tippett $1 million more than they should, Sean Couturier about $6 million more than they should, That's the kind of stuff that adds up collectively. You know, in a bubble, it's not a... All those contracts individually are not terrible. When you add them all together, that's a lot of money. And the Flyers are not in a desperate financial situation yet. We'll know more on that when the 2024 offseason kind of picks up here with what they do with Atkinson, Peterson, Ryan Johansson, and whether they re-sign Konechny, what kind of stupid cap hit that guy gets. You know, so they could be in some more struggle as we move along here. But, you know, it's a solid observation that even though that none of those contracts individually are egregious, overall, this is stuff that is starting to add up. So it is, you know, we'll see. It is also worth noting that Fedotov and Ersson's deals expire at the same time in 2026. Fedotov would be a UFA, Ersson still an RFA. And it looks like Kolosov's deal also expires at the end of 25-26. He would be an RFA as well, so... Some interesting stuff. They have their short-term commitment here. You know, even if they move on from Cal Peterson, which I would almost assume they have to do now. I don't think Sandstrom's coming back. Bjarnason's not going to make the jump to the professional level. They got Kolosov. You can find literally any AHL backup that's better than Cal Peterson and save a bunch of money in the process. So his buyout, let's see. I've written this down in many articles, but I do not know what it is off the top of my head. Buyout contract. His cap hit is $1 million next year compared to the $3.8 million that they would be paying him to play in the AHL. So you got to assume that they would do that. It's a $2 million cap hit in 25-26 then. So that's Cal Peterson's buyout. You can do that and sign literally anybody to a league minimum deal and throw him back there with Kolosov. You know, they tried that last year with Troy Grosnick. Was that who was supposed to be here? And then he played like three games and spent the entire season hurt. To tandem with Sam Ersson there. But, yeah, I don't know. We shall see. But it's you know, they got him under contract. Like, nobody was expecting anything otherwise, right? I still think it would have been awesome if Fedotov just showed up, played those three games, and said, fuck you, I'm leaving, and joined Colorado or something like that. Ah! I mean, it's not great for the Flyers. But just for the sheer chaos of it all, which is what I live for these days. Oh, baby. I mean, he said, thanks for bringing me over. I'm going to go join a good team now. That'd have been fucking awesome, but we're not that lucky. But I think the point overall with this kind of cap is, you know, I would have much rather seen that kind of dollar value go into a goaltender with a little bit of promise, a goaltender that can tandem better, that we know a little bit about. You know, I was in the prediction piece, the 24-25 opening night lineup prediction piece. It was Anthony Stolarz, who's been doing a great job with the Florida Panthers. He has a, as I stall for time, .925 save percentage, 2.03 goals against average in 27 games. 16 of those were wins. With the Panthers this year, you know, whether he leaves Florida or not, who knows, but I would think 3.2 would be around what he would be seeking for. That may number may be a little higher now based on how fucking good he was this year. But, I mean, that's the kind of thing that I would have done in a perfect world. But we knew Fedotov was coming back. We knew Ersson was going to stay. You know, this goaltending is what it is. They've made their own bed in this one. And so... unfortunately, it doesn't seem like this is going anywhere. We just got to hope that Fedotov and Ersson can get it together. Yeah. Hopefully, they're a little more liberal with their rest of Sam Ersson than they were. And, you know, they didn't have much of a choice, right? You play Ersson and attempt to win, or you play Peterson or Sandstrom, and it's almost a guaranteed loss, right? And in that sense, their hands were kind of tied. They had to make their playoff push, you know, which went real well with the benefit of hindsight, didn't it? But, yeah, we'll see what the goaltending looks like. But, yeah, Fedotov under contract, 2 more years. Their goaltending situation is at least temporarily solved. But on a different note, if you've listened to the last 2 episodes of Frequent Flyer, we spent a lot of time breaking down Danny Breer's presser and our reactions to it. And that had happened earlier in the day. We recorded those episodes on Friday. So, you know, just a few hours removed from Breer's presser, and I was not thrilled with it. And then I went back, I listened to most of it again, because I'm like, you know, the quotes about the power play and stuff, and how they're just gonna bring in, you know, Danny Heatley to teach Rocky Thompson how to play a power play, and we're not gonna go out of our way to address that kind of stuff. It's like, God, that's so beyond frustrating, right? So I went back. I'm like, you know, maybe that just clouded my vision, you know? Maybe it was just a few quotes really annoyed me, and I breezed over the parts that seemed promising. And no, I didn't, you know, upon second listen, upon reading through the transcripts and stuff, man, I just... It is impressive how little hope that he managed to instill in this process. You know, there was a lot of downplaying. There was a lot of in-house, we're just going to run it back and make the moves. You know, he propped up guys like Brink and Andre. Yeah, Emil Andre. You know, the guy that played four NHL games for a combined, like, 6 minutes and then got sent to the AHL and was never recalled despite the fact that he was an awesome power play quarterback through most of the season and addressing the holes. And it's just, you know, put a piece out on brotherlypuck.com this morning looking at the history of the Flyers' recent development patterns and how they had guys like Wade Allison and Tanner Lozinski last year come up, used poorly, and then discarded. And they brought in the fresh batch of guys and Brink and Lexell. And what do you do with these guys moving forward? Do they actually take the time and try and develop them further? Or do you just cast them aside? You say, nope, Ronnie Eiter, you're back in the AHL for one more year. You're going to put you on waivers first. I have to do it. We're going to call up Andre. And then Andre is going to spend the entire season, you know, playing seventh defenseman because they went out and signed a Mark Stahl clone that just is so critical for leadership and depth purposes that they play, and Andre doesn't matter, and we don't need to fix the power play. Everything's great as is. It's the kind of thing that really worries me in terms of their handling of this moving forward. And, you know, it's a fascinating little question of, can they make this happen? And listen, I've used this line ad nauseum. 19 of 23 players already signed. All 12 of their forwards and 5 defensemen are already here next year. So how does Brink get utilized better? How do they give this guy more time if everyone's already here? You know, if they do something like buy out Cam Atkinson, do they just hand the baton to Brink and let him play as a regular NHLer? Or do they in turn go, well, we got rid of Atkinson, we need to replace his leadership, and they go out and find a Nick Delorier 3.0 clone, you know, that they can go out there and have a full line of meatheads on the fourth line with Delorier and Hathaway? That's the kind of stuff that I just don't have any faith in them doing. You know, they're going to need to prove that they're either A, going to attempt to develop these prospects further, or B, go out of their way to make an offseason addition, which Breer downplayed the absolute fuck out of during his end of season press conference. We're not gonna, it was a Hextall quote if ever there was one. It was like sitting in 2015. We're not gonna throw money at free agents, and we're not making trades for established players. Okay, that's great, but what are you doing then? And it's gonna be an interesting summer in that regard when it comes to how they go about making improvements to the team. And one of the other things that I had written today, I don't think this happened in either one of the episodes of Freaking Floor yet, but we did do a segment on Martin Neches coming up in one of the episodes, maybe Sunday's episode, maybe next week's episode. I don't know. We record 6 hours of content at one time. I have no idea what episodes they fall into anymore. But, you know, that was not in our notes originally. So I did not have a lot of time to sit and stew on that Neches thing. And I had ended up talking with somebody about that on Twitter. You know, I looked at some rehab project players on the website the other day, you know, guys like David Juracek and Shane Wright and Trevor Zegers, Barrett Hayton, stuff like that. Kind of the younger guys that could use a better scenario, better scenery, rather, to develop further and to kind of come along, and guys that can cash in on. And somebody pointed out Neches, Martin Neches of the Carolina Hurricanes. And I figured I'd talk a little bit more about this because it's just, he's one of those guys that is a real fascinating player. You know, he's been playing primarily on the right wing this year, even though he is does have experience playing center. He had 24 goals and 53 points this year. His career high last year was 28 goals, 71 points. However, he had 3 years of 40-point hockey before that, dating back to 1920. And the whole idea here is that his name was available at the around the trade deadline because he's a pending RFA this summer and Carolina does not want to pay him, which seems like the interesting crux of this entire deal of, if you were doing this, how do you make this trade happen in the first place? You know, do you swap a deck chair with someone like Joel Farabee, which is the example that I used quite a bit in the piece itself? But Farabee has 4 years left at $5 million. You know, if the Hurricanes don't have a problem with Netches personally, would they get rid of him to bring in Farabee on a contract that is probably worse than the one Netches will actually sign, right? So I don't know what you do here. A lot of those main roster trade chips, you know, Konechny, first of all, is not re-signed yet, and when he does, it's probably going to be a stupid cap hit. Owen Tippett just re-signed. You know, Morgan Frost only has 1 year left on an RFA, and he's not really an enticing trade chip, I would assume, for a team like Carolina. You know, maybe Noah Cates is, but he's an RFA at the end of next season as well, at 2.6. Like, is he a fair value trade? Does Carolina want first-round picks in draft capitals and prospects? It's possible. You know, if they feel as though their roster is fine, if they could lose Netches and their roster is fine on the whole, if they've got enough internal help to replace him in the short term, you could get him for assets and then use, you know, the Flyers get Netches, say the Hurricanes get first round pick and Bobby Brink, just for funsies. I don't know if I was going to get angry at that, but if that's the case, Carolina then has extra assets at their disposal that they can use at their own will to make their team better. You know, if the 2025 trade deadline rolls around, you can flip that first round pick for a main roster player that better fits their situation. And, you know, from the Flyers' perspective, like, the biggest thing Netches is going for him right now is that he can potentially play center. But the question is he more than a 50-point player? And if he can revert back to C, he would easily be their best option. But that's not necessarily putting over Netches as much as it is downplaying how shit the rest of the Flyers centers are. Well, who's his competition right now? Broken down Sean Couturier, broken down Scott Laughton, whatever the fuck it is Ryan Poehling is doing these days, and Morgan Frost. Woo-hoo. You know, it's just not, it's not that impressive. So it's a possibility that this is a trade that could work out. But, you know, as I alerted in the piece, it's just, there's a lot of weird hurdles in this one that just, it does not feel like this is a natural trade partner or a natural situation that could work itself out well. You know, is it worth going through all that hurdle for either team if you're essentially just replacing deck chairs? The Flyers get a center on a similar contract. The Hurricanes get a winger on a contract that they could have just offered Netches in the first place and who is overall a lot less dynamic than someone like Netches could be. So just an interesting little thought experiment there that, you know, was sparked by some conversations on Twitter over the last couple days. But to tie that in, just going back to just Joel Farabee for a second, there's been a lot of really interesting support for the idea of trading this guy this summer. I was surprised at how many fans, you know, there's obviously the people that you can't say anything to, right? This is the greatest player that ever lived. All the Flyers players are the greatest players that ever lived, and they're great and amazing and wonderful, and we can't trade any of them, yada, yada, yada. We all know that bullshit by now. But there's a lot of people that are not as tied to Farabee as I would assume that they are. But when it comes to moving him, you know, he did have a career year. 22 goals and 50 points were both personal bests for him. His career high, previous career high was 20 goals and 39 points. So he got a little further, but not that spectacularly. And it's the common theme with the Flyers of just, here's a guy who could be a good complementary player, as with most of the guys on this roster can be good complementary players, but they don't have any stars to lead the way, right? A team full of Robins and no Batman. But with Tippett locked up now, with Konechny probably going to get locked up soon enough, and they seem to like Tyson Forrester, It does kind of tie their hands when it comes to Farabee. Seems like he becomes the odd man out in this situation. It's between he or Konechny at this point, right? And it's very highly unlikely they move Konechny, no matter how disappointing that fact is. But I don't know. I don't know if they move Farabee or not. I mean, if they need a center, that'd be the way to do it. But man, that contract, 4 years at $5 million AAV for a guy that is topped out as a 50-point player, you know, that's not great odds there. That's not great value. He's only 24. He just turned 24 back in February. This is his fifth NHL season already. Next year will be six. God damn, where the hell does the time go with this kind of stuff? But I don't know if they're going to move Farabee or not. It just seems like they're running out of options. You can't collect 50-point wingers forever. You know, you're going to have to make some sacrifices sooner or later, and he seems like the guy to do it with, but that contract kind of holds him back. That's why trading someone like Konechny makes a lot of sense, because you don't have the long-term commitment. His value has never been higher. You can get rid of him. Let his extension be some other team's problem, but, you know, the Flyers love to pander, and trading Konechny is by far the most unpopular thing they could do right now from a team perspective. You know, they're pandering to the fans' perspective, so I can't imagine that he's re-signing. I think it's a bad idea. I think it'll bite them sooner rather than later, but, you know, I'll just have to deal with that one. I did look at Konechny's potential contract extensions on the website this week as well, and ran through a couple different ideas. The ideal contract, the team-friendly contract, the not-so-team-friendly contract, and the most likely outcome. And I still think the ideal contract is in the three-year range. Even if it's a slightly higher AAV, if you get him 3 years, $10 million, I'd do that. And then reassess. He'll be 31 at the end of the time that extension comes to an end. Chances are he's not going to be much better than the 60 to 70 points he's putting up now. And if he declines by then you can deal with it when the time comes. And that's not an impossible contract to move in the meantime. You know, the team-friendly deal, I listed at 5 years, 8.5 AAV, which is, he gets his raise. It's what, $3 million more than he's making right now? But only at 5 years. You're not going the full max term of eight. You give yourself, you know, a little bit of flexibility. He's not getting paid completely terribly out the number. You know, 8.5 is not as bad as 10, even with the cap going up. The not-so-team-friendly deal is just the max term of 8 years and a shitty $10 million AAV to go with it, which, like, as gross as that sounds, that feels like a number that is totally possible between the excuse of the cap going up, and he's a team-friendly guy, and they can pay this guy whatever the hell he wants, and they're never going to think twice about it. Nobody's going to think twice about it until it fucks them, you know, 2 or 3 years down the road from now. I still think the most likely outcome is probably max term with about $8 million AAV. 8x8. I mean, that's such a not good number for a second-line player like Konechny, you know, at 28 years old when his contract is up next year. You know, but it plays into what we opened the episode with the Fedotov thing of, hey, this is not great, but it could be worse. You know, $8 million AAV for someone like Konechny could be worse. You can give him $10 million. You know, that number's not great. The term's not great, but it's something that could work. And, I mean, 8 years for an extension for in-house talent is just the status quo these days, no matter how ill-advised of a move that it is. You know, this is a situation very similar to what they were in with Sean Couturier a couple years ago. Here's a guy that was fine for a long time. He had a couple personal best seasons right before he was due for an extension. The Flyers signed him a year early, and it's been biting him in the ass ever since because it was an ill-advised contract to sign in the first place. And you're kind of in that move with Konechny. You know, I don't think this guy's going to miss 2 years with a back injury or anything like that, but he's at his peak right now at an age where he's quickly approaching 30, and his playing style is not attuned to him having a long, successful, prosperous career, and he's trapped on this shit team! You know, one of the things I wrote back in the pros and cons of re-signing Konechny was whether or not they were going to build around him when they re-signed him. Was this a guy that they're going to bring back and play, you know, just exist? Is he just going to exist on this team for a few years? Or are they going to say, okay, we have Konechny locked up now. This is our window. This is our star player, no matter how sad of a state that is on, you know, the nature of the team. This is our player. This is what we're going to do. XYZ. we have to make it happen here. And man, like, I hope that's the case. You know, if you're re-signing Konecny, you better fucking attempt to win with him rather than just piss away the next 8 years and realize that he's shit and he's stuck on this contract forever. But, yeah, I don't know. I'll have to wait and see what they do with Konecny. But they can re-sign him, I believe, this July, the start of the new league year. He'll be open for his deal. I got to assume they start sooner rather than later. I can't imagine they wait until next summer to bring him back or the trade deadline or something like that. I'm still on Team Trade Konecny. I just don't think they're going to. We'll see, but it's probably going to be a not great deal. I can't imagine he makes less than $8 million. And if he's not making, I don't know. 5.5. The problem is, I think a decent number for the guy is probably 7. You know, obviously with the cap going up, that would be a much better number later, which is where, you know, the short-term pain of an $8 to $9 million deal would come through the hardest. But, you know, I'll have to wait and see. I have to see wait and see what they do with any of these players. Do they move Farabee? Do they pursue Necas? Do they pursue, you know, someone like David Juracek in the summer? Think about Juracek beyond all else. Juracek and Bonk as your 1-2 punch on the right side a couple of years from now. Oh, buddy. That is hot. Now, whether they do it or not, you know, TBD, probably not, because I don't know. We're still lying under contract, and Eric Johnson's probably coming back. They never mentioned Johnson. Revisiting Breer's presser, by the way, jumping back to that topic. And they said, Mark Stahl and Gurionov are not coming back. It's like, okay, they didn't mention Johnson. Does that mean Johnson's coming back for another year? I'm not going to be happy if he does. But, fucking burn that bridge when we get there, right? Don't need my blood pressure elevated before he actually re-signs. But, we shall see. And first round of the playoffs continues on. Is anybody watching the playoffs? I feel like every year when the playoffs happen, and you're watching good teams play their best hockey, and it's like, yep, the Flyers are nowhere fucking close to any of this. I don't think they could stand with any of these teams right now. You know, it's just, it is a totally different world. You realize just how far away this team is from being truly competitive. You know, if they made this postseason, especially if they snuck back into the second wild card spot, you know, the end of the season went differently and they made it to the playoffs and they played the Rangers in the first round. Does anybody believe they would have survived that series? I don't think so. And, man, I don't know, even Carolina at this point, I wouldn't want to play them. Some scary-ass teams. A few weeks ago, I thought they could have beat Carolina. Now, not even close. Not even close. But, you know, just the state of the team, I guess. It's up to Danny Breer to make it happen. To fix shit. Whether or not they do, well, we're just going to have to wait and see here. Middle of April, we got, what, weeks? Yeah, and I think the draft is the end of June? 27th or 28th or something like that? Which is, 2 months from now? So, had a long time to wait, and these goddamn playoffs are long, arduous. Someone who doesn't have a horse in the race, they're a lot of fun, but, you know, this is what it is, I suppose. Well, I think that's all I had to talk about today, was this Fedotov guy and a bunch of other stuff that I can dive deeper into in the spoken, but it's like BPW radio back in the day. Write a bunch of articles and then talk about them. Man, that's a throwback. Season 1. Doesn't it actually be Season 7, Brotherly Pod, already? God, 800 some episodes. Where's the time gone, man? Shit flies when you're talking about Flyers hockey nonstop. Constant anguish and misery. And on that note, everybody, we'll call it a day here. I'll be back. Well, Sunday we'll have another episode of Freaking Flyer. That may be the Necas episode. And if not, then it's the previous Sunday. Following Sunday, I guess. Episode. That doesn't matter. One of these episodes, we'll talk about Martin Natchez with Mike and Manny. God damn it. And, at Dan the Flyer, Van at Burley, Puck at Burley, _. Plenty of shit up on the website this week. A lot of that stuff, you can check it out. BrotherlyPuck.com. Dan the Flyer, Fan _ jerseys over on Instagram. You want to check that out. I display my extensive. That's the word. I'm a professional. Extensive jersey collection. And, Tip to Tip Podcast out there with Shane. That'll be up soon. He'll be back in a couple of weeks, everybody. We're looking for Tip to Tip to return soon. So you can check that out. Tip to Tip Podcast on both Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And tip to tip pod on Twitter. And K215P, I hope you fucking suffer. That's all I'll say on that one. You know who you are. Fucking just suffer. All right, everyone. Until next time, goodbye and good night.